and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman. You can call me H.
And I'm old man Q, dying a slow and inevitable death.
Now that is true week to week, but why do you mention it in particular today?
H, I gotta tell you, something hit me a month or so ago. I shaved off my beard. I was like, it's time. It's getting scratchy. I need a fresh start with the beard. And I entered into the beginning of the new year with a beard growing again. And I have two snow white hairs on the left-hand side of my beard. And this is a new and very recent development. And honestly, it's reminding me of my own mortality.
Now, white hairs that, you know, I tend to think that white hair looks quite good on men in general and women as well. But, you know, men in particular, you got the kind of salt and pepper look. How negative of an experience is this?
It honestly has no material impact on my life, but I figured I would be a little dramatic with it because honestly, I saw them and I said, oh, hello, friends. Is this what I'm in for? Because I already have gray hairs on the top of my head. I've quite gotten used to those. I'm in my 30s. That stuff is going to happen. But to see one now wrapping around on the chin area, I don't know how many years away I am from just, you know how old guys get like back hair, even though I don't know why, but I'm afraid of back hair, H. I'm like in fear of that happening to me.
That's fair enough. My beard gets blonde hair as well. And so it's kind of a mixture of blonde and brown. So I don't know when I start getting white hairs, if I'm really even going to notice or whether I'm just going to write it off as just being the blonde that I'm used to seeing in there.
What color would you describe your hair as?
So it was blonde when I was younger. And because I'm of German descent, it's turning darker and darker as I get older. But it is still quite a bit lighter than my like eyebrows and beard. So I still kind of count it as blonde. And I think that whenever I create myself and character creators in video games, I always go blonde on top, brown on the bottom. I don't know if that's the phrase that I really want to endorse.
No, but you did say it. So you have to kind of live with the consequences therein.
Anyways, let's, speaking of character creators, let us create some characters of our own. It looks like I'm starting off today. And I'm not entirely confident in this one, but let's get it out there and see what happens. This is a Getting Over It with Bennett Foddy Metroidvania. And that's all that I have to go on. So, you know, that's a game with a twisty, turny, windy map. And let's see if we can put it in a branching pathway kind of map where you could revisit earlier sections and perhaps use skills and power-ups that you picked up later on to increase your effectiveness in traversing this world and unlocking new pathways. So, a Bennett Foddy Metroidvania.
Okay. Well, I think we got to start with the basic mechanics. So, people that don't know, Getting Over It, you're kind of playing a man in a pot with a sledgehammer who is trying to climb a reasonably unclimbable mountain and sort of, I guess the best way to describe the progression is usually, I'd say two steps forward, one step back, but it's usually one step forward, two steps back, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's based on an old Flash game called Sexy Hiking, in which you have kind of full 360 degree control over this sledgehammer that your character is holding. And, you know, he can kind of move it anywhere around him in a circular radius, you know, with his arms. And you propel yourself forward by pushing the sledgehammer against the ground and then using that almost kind of like a pogo stick. You would propel yourself in a certain direction based on pushing off of the ground, pushing off of objects. You can hook the hammer around things above you to kind of latch onto that and pull yourself up. But a lot of it is kind of using a counterintuitive, as Bennett Foddy is famous for, as the creator of Quap, a counterintuitive control system to move an unlikely character in ways that that don't necessarily suit the mechanics. And so it's popular with streamers because it's a frustration game, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of taken on a life of its own. And let's see if we can expand on it.
I like the idea of the Metroidvania aspect of having to go back into other areas, but you know, I think what you're not pitching, at least from what I understand, a Metroidvania where, or just simply a Metroidvania that's not fun to move around in? Is that kind of what we're pitching here?
Well, potentially. I mean, I think that there have been, you know, some of these types of games that are very progression focused. Movement becomes markedly more fun the farther you get into the game. Like even Hollow Knight at the beginning, you know, that is a game that is mechanically satisfying to control, but yeah, you feel the frustration of not being able to do even some basic things that you're used to in video games, like double jumping or wall jumping, to try to get to places where normally you're used to being able to get to. You can see the path forward, but you just can't reach it because, you know, the knight's movement is very limited at the beginning. So yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's completely out of the question, but perhaps we do kind of smooth over those movement difficulties as power-ups are gained.
That's interesting. Or you go the opposite direction and make movement slowly more and more and more challenging.
Right.
I love the idea of a character. I feel like we may have pitched this before, but a character that is only ever moves from the like recoil of their blaster.
Yeah, but we have certainly used blasters recoil as like a movement method, but I don't think we've ever like based something entirely around that. Kind of reminds me of Ori and the Blind Forest, how you get this ability to bounce off of projectiles in the air. And so you almost have to aim in the opposite direction of the way that you want to go to propel yourself forward because of the kind of equal and opposite reactions.
Yeah. I especially like taking a cue from the sort of getting over it design and maybe having the lead character be disabled or some way, or like in a wheelchair. And just imagine a wheelchair, like Samus in a wheelchair that every time they shoot their blaster, the wheels kind of like squeak backwards or whatever. And so you find yourself sort of firing around and it's propelling the wheelchair at different speeds. Maybe you can fire sort of diagonal up and diagonal down like you get in an old Super Metroid, and that can kind of slightly propel the wheelchair up and down and that sort of thing. So you can gain momentum in these different directions by firing your blaster, but because you also have to fire your blaster at enemies, maybe enemies serve as the like weird angles and inclines, right? Because it's like, well, I have to shoot this enemy, but it's going to send me back in the wrong direction. And potentially, you know, you can't just like spam shoot an enemy because you'll lose a ton of ground that you've gained.
You know, especially if you have a charge beam or whatever the equivalent of a charge beam would be, where the longer you charge it up, the stronger blast you're going to get.
The
more damage it does to enemies and especially bosses. But at the same time, you are propelling yourselves towards potential dangers.
Yeah, that's cool. And then that way, when you get power-ups and stuff, that blast potentially more powerful, or you get like a gun that shoots in two directions at the same time and you can swap between weapons and throttle your own speed as you're moving around. You can kind of essentially get a weapon to be your braking maneuver as well.
All right, so let's think about upgrades, things that we can add to this contraption that can assist with movement or even make it harder, like you were saying earlier. Perhaps you unlock the ability to put the brakes on at some point, and so, you know, it doesn't completely negate momentum. If you have backwards momentum and you put the brakes on, maybe you tip backwards or you tip forward if you're going the other way, and that can allow you to perform different types of attacks by angling yourself in different ways. Like one of the things that I really liked with, to take this to a completely different type of game with Super Smash Brothers Ultimate, the Piranha Plant DLC, I really enjoy its down B attack where it retreats back into its pot and then it blasts out in the direction that it's facing, and you can trigger it in the air and just kind of like haphazardly rotate yourself in the way that you want it to go and just hope that it kind of aligns when you finally unleash it. And I just really like that that feeling of just kind of pushing the button and releasing when it feels right and just hoping that you're aiming correctly.
That's interesting. And I also love when you're talking about upgrades, I start thinking you know, there are all sort of different mobility options for people who are in wheelchairs. We see those sort of racing wheelchairs. We see motorized wheelchairs, and maybe there's different ones at different parts of the map or different like transformations. It's almost the equivalent of like the tunics in Zelda that you can get, and each of them have their own special attributes or special abilities. And maybe they even affect your blaster or whatever as you kind of navigate these environments. So you're kind of choosing which chair to use when inside the environment to kind of get the most bang for your buck. You're like, well, I'm going to encounter these enemies. I'm going to need to shoot them more. So I need that sort of auto locking wheelchair or something like that. The rusty wheelchair. Oh, the rusty wheelchair, H, it's terrible at moving, but luckily it helps you plant your feet when you really need to fight.
So here's something that I'm not confident that I didn't just see this idea somewhere else and I'm not remembering the source of it. And so if any listeners could point us towards the source, because I'm fairly confident that I've seen this in an indie game somewhere, maybe just something that I've seen at one of the kind of local Seattle area shows. You know, it's kind of like Asteroids, how your momentum is conserved. And so you're just kind of encouraged to just tap on the accelerator every once in a while when you need to get out of the way of something. But instead of being able to propel yourself in an asteroid style game, you can only propel yourself through your blaster, as we are talking about here. And so you're always moving backwards and away from the direction that you're shooting, which is presumably where your attention is located. And so having movement and attacks kind of playing these opposite roles against each other, which again, I think is something that that has been played with before by some smart young indie developers, but you know, to take those ideas and to take that kind of counterbalance against each other and move it into something that's more 2D linear exploration based, that there's room for that.
Yeah, I could see you being able to pull this game off without like enemies at all, right? It's just, I mean, the enemy could be
you need something to shoot at, though, you know, a reason to fire off your gun.
That's true. But I mean, like, even if you were doing just the sort of wheelchair bound, like, it's so interesting for me to think of, you know, Samus just keeps landing on these planets where she happens to have a bunch of things to shoot. Like, what are we doing here, Samus? Like, why are we, why do we have to kill everything? And so the idea of potentially having a relatively combatless environment, but it's the equivalent of many Hollywood style like hospital escape scenes. I'm thinking like the Kill Bill hospital escape scene specifically. That could be kind of interesting, where like your combat is, you know, your own body and its lack of function.
All right, we're out of time, and let's name this one. I've got an idea. I'm not sure if it's any good. How about Reeling Wheels?
No arguments for me.
Okay. All right. Now, the idea that you're so excited to share with us, what are you bringing today?
I can't believe this. We talked about character creating. We talked about disability here. Well, I want to pitch a fighting game where you have to build all your fighting characters yourself. And the build process is sort of taking a person and choosing how much of them and what parts of them you're going to replace with cybernetics. So maybe it's like a progression thing and you go level after level, and each level you're unlocking parts and potentially having to trade away more and more of your organic self, or you can opt to keep your organic parts for bonuses and not get certain, you know, cybernetic enhancements. So each side coming with different sorts of benefits and trade-offs, trying to maybe move up some sort of linear progression in a story sort of fighting game, or maybe it's a little bit more shotgun and there's a quick, like, assemble your fighter before you get in the ring, and you're just trying to, like, make something that will work for the way you like to fight.
All right, and we are starting the clock. There's a lot of ways I could see this going. Of course, you know, characters like Jax in Mortal Kombat are, you know, fairly familiar with the cybernetic arms and all sorts of cybernetic, you know, the sci-fi character tropes. This idea of maybe respeccing your character before every match. Let's say that these cybernetic parts are far more powerful than the human equivalent. And so, you know, you could, maybe you are rewarded based on the proportion of your character that is still human. And so you know, maybe you take lesser rewards, the more that you give yourself this kind of boost of cybernetic abilities. Maybe you have to sacrifice the part of your body that you want to replace based on kind of a random draw or a crane machine that you play before every fight. Oh, no. And if you chop off your arm to replace it with a cybernetic arm before one fight and you don't happen to get another right arm the next fight, then you just have to fight without that arm. And so, you know, every part that you lose is a potential major, you know, potential handicap for you down the line.
In a fighting game, so much is about move set and people knowing each character's move set. I like the idea of move sets being attached to either cybernetic or organic parts of the body. Like, oh, this person can't, you know, high kick that high yet because they've still got a regular old human leg and they can't do this like crazy split in midair with their cybernetic legs. So you can kind of see in or like a move set of a character is organically changing throughout some set of matches. Mm-hmm. But it also made me think that like maybe the life bar is just simply humanity. It's like you're a human, yeah. Your heart, your blood or whatever. And literally like there is just less health if you have, you know, cybernetic limbs. That could be one of the prices you pay of like, well, your actual vitals, the things keeping you alive until you're all the way down to basically a heart beating in a robot body with even a cybernetic skull and just meat brain, meat heart. And you've got like two hits before you can go down, but you're ultra powerful. Could be kind of fun.
It's interesting, this idea of, you know, what the story of like the sock that, you know, has a hole in it. And so you, you patch up the sock and then eventually it's all patches. At what point does it stop being the original sock? And at what point does it, you know, become something different? If it's kind of taken apart piece by piece.
I also like the idea of when you go to upgrade different parts of the body, if you have a range of options for what those upgrades are, like, can your opponent attach, like, of the arms that they choose, could they attach a purely offensive attachment for their arm that says has like a saw blade and could remove limbs from you throughout the course of a match? Mm-hmm. That would be kind of interesting, of like a war of attrition of how many body parts do you actually have left over a set of three or five matches or something like that.
Maybe there are ways to target specific body parts, and if you remove something from your opponent, then you can attach it to yourself. And so you're going through this, you're trying to, you know, just kind of scrap the other person and take what you can, kind of like cutting off the tail in a Monster Hunter or a Dark Souls game.
Oh man, can you imagine after each match, there's a little sort of BattleBot style mini game where you're going around playing these little sweeping robots trying to hungry hippo up like random fleshy body parts or cybernetic body parts on the battlefield, like almost the Zamboni of match ring cleaning.
Well, maybe it's more interesting than to kind of remove the cybernetic element and make this all biological, because we had this idea before of once you go metal, you don't go back. You know, once you've replaced a body part, then, you know, you are, that part is robotic for all points going forward. But maybe, you know, to go back to something that, you know, I worked on at work, the recent Indie Showcase, there were a couple of games in there that are about mutations. And so maybe you can mutate in different ways and then steal opponents' limbs by targeting them specifically, or trying to sever them without harming the limbs themselves. And you can take those mutations, and so there's kind of a randomized element. And if you're not happy with your build, then you can replace aspects of it. But, you know, it doesn't ever feel like you are moving forward and cutting off your path to move in the opposite direction if you choose to do so later.
That's interesting. And what if, I don't know if this is kind of restating what you just said a little bit, but I love the idea of having two stock fighters, and as limbs are cut off and picked up and swapped, that you are either in real time or between matches actually trading what your move sets are. So it's kind of to your advantage to be fighting someone that someone else knows how to fight as, because they might potentially be picking up some of your move sets, and it encourages you to like know more characters other than your quote main.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm not really sure how easy that would be to do, because you know, every character in fighting games are kind of, you know, each individually balanced with their own move set. But I wonder if you could just like take a certain kick from one character, slap it onto another character model, as long as, you know, the skeletons all aligned correctly. And, you know, just having that kind of flexibility, then, you know, I really like that kind of need to adapt and need to change your style and to come up against something that you potentially have never seen before.
We're really creating a real mess of a hitbox situation, aren't we?
I mean, potentially, yeah.
People are like, I don't know what the hitbox is. He's got Chun-Li's thighs and Ken's Hadouken. This is a mess. What I like about this idea is it feels like, you know, in the spirit of what Nintendo and the Nindie Showcase showed us with the Crypt of the Necrodancer and the Legend of Zelda mashup. It would be so much fun to do this with a known franchise, to give people that sense of like fun freshness. Even if you did a 2D Street Fighter spinoff, like Street Fighter Undead or something, where like everyone's a zombie and limbs are flying off, and suddenly you've got and potentially you get like, let's say I happen to get Ken's arm or something like that. Is it Ken? Yeah, whatever, the Hadouken. But like, if you only have one of the body parts, the Hadouken is like very small, it's very weak, or it's easily blockable. You have to kind of collect multiple body parts from the characters to power up and eventually have their move set.
And so I guess the ultimate version of these characters would just be like a full set of Ryu parts or whatever. It's one of the things that I've always found funny about the Twilight series of books and movies, how, you know, spoilers, when Bella becomes a vampire, at first she's like extremely... I know, I hate to spoil for you, but you've had long enough to read it.
Okay, all right. Statute of limitations is over.
Yeah, right. At first she's like way more powerful than the other vampires, because, and the explanation they give is because she still has human blood in her. So I don't understand why like the rest of society aren't like superhumans, because we're all human blood. Like,
yeah.
Doesn't that make us like ultra, ultra powerful? But regardless,
we can walk out in the sun and everything. It's incredible.
Yeah, so I like this. You are removing body parts. You are slapping them on yourself. It also reminds me of Shadows of the Damned, I think it is, Suda 51 game, where when you die, then basically your head like explodes off and you have to rejoin with your other limbs to come back to life.
Oh, I like that. I like the ability too, to, if you have something akin to a super move or the ultras, whatever they're called in whatever respective fighting game you're playing, that some of those moves can be to like reclaim some of your old body parts or something. There's kind of a call, come back to your home body parts. In real time, you can maybe leave your opponent partially limbless and back in charge of your own moveset, which would be kind of cool.
Oh, well, let's end that round and let's come up with a name. So what do we want to call this?
What if we do something like Trading Blows?
Yeah, it has that trading aspect in there. I like that.
Yeah. And you're blowing off body parts, and that'll be fun.
Cool. Well, yeah, I say this is a good game. Let's move now to the community and see what y'all have for us this week. This comes from Sir Kibble, who says, a battle royale. Instead of guns and ammo, you start with a plain character. Select either water or land. You choose a main attribute from a water animal or a land animal. You kill animals and gain their sub-attacks. There are good attributes and bad. Once a player kills you, they can gain the sub-attributes you collected. This actually sounds pretty familiar.
Pretty cool.
But let's see what we can do with this. Last player standing wins. Let's start the clock. This does play really nicely off of the one that you just gave. Like, you know, we are essentially kind of gaining attributes of the opponents. Kind of reminds me of Cubivore on the GameCube. This idea of even like Spore, I think you could harvest DNA from creatures that you kill to like empower your next generation of creatures.
Right, which is a little bit dark, right? Kind of like absorb these people or conquer them.
Right.
Yeah, I really like this. So like, what are some of the stats, right? That's immediately where I start going of like, okay, water animals are potentially cold-blooded. I guess that's a bonus because you can survive in different climates. Maybe that like has that going for it, but you know, just being out in the air is potentially a debuff for you.
Right. So let's kind of take a macro level at this. So it introduces a battle royale. Let's say it's a traditional 100 versus 100, but it's delineated between land animals and water animals. And so, you know, already we're coming into a point where probably half the players aren't playing with the other half, which seems limiting, but at the same time, maybe it's really cool. Maybe you spend
all the time. We've got Stadia
now,
H. We could do 200 players if you wanted.
We could do whatever we want. Maybe you spend all of the time in your natural environment, completely cut off from the other environment, gaining skills and growing. And essentially it turns into like a 1v1 of like two kaiju level creatures that have evolved into these monsters. And so you know, by the time that the sea animal evolves the right kind of combination of attributes to venture onto the land, like Godzilla emerging from the sea, or whether it's the land animal that you know, turns into like a giant killer platypus or something like that and go underwater. You know, these, it's a, almost like in football, how you have the different divisions that face off against each other in the Super Bowl. It's like, you know, they spent all their time in their own pond, like trying to grow stronger and to become the best, but you don't know what your opponents are doing. And, you know, eventually you're going to have to go head to head and it's going to become like a great showdown of these two wildly divergent creatures.
And it turns out that it's going to be the Patriots 6 time Super Bowl chin. Anyway, I really like that idea of that moment of like the land and the animal, because almost like when you choose to be in one group or another, let's say you get that choice at the beginning of a match, maybe that is also tied to your bet on which team is better. Mm-hmm. So like so many times, like I enjoy the 50v50 Fortnite mode because it's almost just like you can get the experience, the sense of victory, even if like you weren't able to contribute much. So the idea of almost Splatoon, like, are you ketchup, are you mayo, picking land or sea, you're placing your bet on that team, and to watch like a mini movie sequence of the leader from each team become a mini little kaiju and then have a Godzilla like fight or something, even if you like blow them up times 10 and make them like fight and crush the island. I think that would be so much fun to watch because like now you're just like, yeah, that guy who I'm cheering for, he killed me. He killed all of us on our team. He's the best representative of what we can offer on this side of the field.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So you have, it is this kind of David versus Goliath type of battle. I guess that's a bad example, but like the premise of the story was like, we put our best soldier forward, you put your best soldier forward.
Right.
I guess the whole appeal of the story is that it turned into a massive upset, but maybe the same thing could happen here.
Yeah, but like if the map is designed to kind of have equal balance, or if you do have like an island like setting, you could have, you know, if one woman kills everybody and as a sea creature and another kills everybody as a land creature, then like the map can be designed that either once they grow or once the match becomes small enough, like you kind of have to make sure that the battle happens partially on both players, like turf, or, you know, so that there's a little balance there, because obviously the abilities are going to be different and what have you. it'd be interesting because then not only are you balancing like interspecies war, but intraspecies war.
So the point that I'm having a difficult time wrapping my head around at first is water creatures are definitely restricted to being in the water for that first part of the game. You know, if a fish comes on land, then it doesn't last that long. But land animals have a little bit more freedom of mobility to move into the water. And I kind of wonder what kind of limiting factors we want to send there, or maybe they're just able to kind of like paddle on top and they're just kind of wasting their time if they go in because, you know, everyone else can pretty easily outmaneuver them or just dive down deeper and become essentially invisible.
Well, maybe what Sir Kibble was trying to get to here is that all the species are primary land or primary water, but can successfully survive in both. And since any creature could eliminate any other creature, what you get is if you're absorbing the gains and the sub attributes of the other person, the water creatures can toughen themselves up against land creatures by defeating land creatures, and vice versa, the land creatures by defeating water creatures. So they're both incentivized to kind of attack each other. And then it is like the person left on either side is someone who will have, let's say if the law of averages applies here, will have absorbed about half land and half water creatures, therefore creating some sense of balance. But like maybe that person, after they defeat the second to last person or the fourth to last person, however you do the math, they realize, oh my God, all the water creatures only killed really other water creatures, and I'm going to be like a pure water creature build going up against a pure land creature build. And so like the build themselves, like the attributes kind of expose themselves only to the victor.
Okay. So how do we make sure that this ends up resulting in a one-on-one and that, you know, the last sea creature doesn't die 20 minutes into the game and then there's still like another 15 land creatures left?
Oh, that's a good question. Reddit would say balance your game, bro.
Mm-hmm.
but what do we say? I have to think that to me, it's a matter of like, do you keep the group separate or not? Because if you keep the group separate, then it's going to be tough to diversify the builds, which I think is what Sir Kibble was trying to get here. Maybe that's okay. Is it okay that you get like even if you end up with two land creatures, if all the water creatures were defeated, they're both going to have some amount of water creature in them. It would be interesting to see like who potentially defeated a chain of people to end up with more water creature attributes. Nobody would be a, almost like the human race, nobody would be a pure single breed thing by the end of the match.
That's true. It would, you know, essentially kind of always result in very wildly varying creatures fighting up against each other. And that's still fun to watch. But, you know, it takes away some of that kind of team aspect of, you know, like go water team versus go land team. It's just kind of two of the same team. If you were kind of placing bets or maybe, you know, for the streaming audiences, it would just be like, hey, you know, whoever wins is going to be land.
That's a good question. So what if we did something where, because I think what you would get in any sort of min-maxing player base is you'd probably get people who just like always pick land or always pick water and that sort of thing. So I love the idea, and I don't think many battle royales have done this yet, where you get dropped into the match and or you get fired into the match as a little amoeba in like some shell casing that like breaks out, and wherever your capsule lands is what you evolve into. So you kind of find out right when a match starts if you're going to be a land or water creature, and then you can kind of take away people's ability to kind of always self-select in one or the other and give people a little taste of different gameplay. It's almost like having it always be random heroes in Overwatch or even in Apex.
Right, that's all the time we have on that one. Let's come up with an interesting name for this animalistic battle royale.
We could get sued by Capcom and call it Hunter Monster.
Hunter Monster? Or kind of go in the cubivore route and just more directly call it Carnivore.
Carnivore? All right, because you're eating each other.
Carn of War, maybe.
Carn of War. Wow, I I like that. That's pretty good. I don't know what it means,
but
hey, here's an old term that might that could either be a subtitle to Carnivore, because that's still objectively funny. But what do people order at the restaurants? The surf and turf.
Okay, I like that. That's pretty good. Carnivore, surf and turf.
That's good. Now it's a series. We can do spinoffs. We can really franchise this thing. I love it.
The space race, where part of you are aliens and part of you are Olympic gymnastic runners. I don't know. And that was from Sir Kibble, who wrote into our website, playwrightcast.com/pitch. You can also email us at playwrightcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at playwrightcast, and in all of those instances, it is spelled PLAYWRITECAST.
This is the section of the show where I start telling you pitches, and I'm going to do it a little bit different this week. I'm going to tell you about a service called Apple Music, where you can go in and you can search Apple Music for our good friend Protodome, and of course, stream songs like Hello World, our theme song, but also he's got other songs. I've been listening to I Want You in My Bedroom, a very fun track, yeah, from Protodome. That's way up there in his list. You can also stream his stuff on Spotify, too, so don't forget, you can always just listen to Protodome. You don't always have to go to Bandcamp if you don't, like, have a Bandcamp or whatever. And while you're in Apple Music, why don't you search for Playwright and leave us a review? It's one of the best things you can do to help the show. It's in the podcast section. Type in just our name. I'm sure you'll find us. And only 5-star reviews. We'll only accept 5-star reviews. If you give us a 4-star, we understand. We'll talk it out. You write into the show. We'll send you a little cashola and we'll get it going.
Well, okay, let's rein this back in here.
Okay, sorry.
We're going to see a lot of 4-star reviews, I think.
Fair enough. 5-star reviews only. And H, I got an email this week reminding us that we can tell listeners to say, "Hey Siri, play Playwright Podcast," and she will find the show for you and start playing the latest episode. So if you're
what is all this Apple stuff that we're...
I know. Well, it's all in
one
service.
Are you getting money that you're not telling me about? Because
I'm getting that cheddar, baby. So anyway, you can do all that stuff. And I just thought it was really fun to go over a friend's house, especially if they've got, a phone or a HomePod or something, and just say play the show and just inflict us on them.
Say start playing Playwright Podcast at 10 p.m. tonight.
That's right. And hey, you know, we're on Spotify too, so they could probably do it to Google and Alexa and all these people. Alexa, play Playwright Podcast on Spotify. All right. I hope
for the
people
next
had their
3 years
until all of Ryan's beard is gray. also, a special thank you to our parent network, the Cane and Rinse Podcast Network, where there are great shows over at caneandrinse.com, like The Sausage Factory, where we interview game developers, not we, but how it works, and the Cane and Rinse Podcast, where they review games, and of course, Sound of Play, where H and Leon and the crew trade off and play some amazing video game music.
That's right. Well, let's take us out of the show with a miniature pitch. And what I want to pitch is a game where you are trying to survive an Italian horror movie with all of the fake blood and crazy lighting and everything. All right, we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
All right.
I did a spooky goodbye.